If you have your New Testament with you tonight, I invite you to turn to the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 11. 1 Corinthians 11, and in a moment we'll begin reading at verse 2. We began the series Thursday evening, essentially reminding ourselves once again that marriage and the home are of divine invention. It was conceived in the mind of God, and therefore is not merely a social expedient or institution that has begun to outlive its purpose. Last night we built upon that foundation and added the fact that it is indeed a covenant relationship. And we looked at various passages to explain what a covenant was and how God felt about that. And then we looked at two or three passages that explicitly declare that marriage is indeed a covenant. And again, remember that essentially when you hear the word covenant, think of a legally binding agreement between two or more parties. Now, tonight we will build upon that. Since marriage is divinely ordained, and since it is indeed a covenant, then that places upon those of us who have entered into this covenant with God as witness certain responsibilities that are ours to follow through on, and which we will be judged on that day. And I think there is no better passage to introduce this whole subject of responsibilities, not only in the home, but elsewhere, with this passage here in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 2 and following. Paul says, "Now I praise you that you remember me in all things and hold fast the traditions, even as I delivered them unto you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." Now stop there for just a moment. And I want to suggest for your consideration something that I came across the other day, that a writer declared that this statement that is found here in verse 3 is the bedrock foundation upon which all else stands. The divine order, God, Christ, man, and then woman. But continuing on here, "Every man praying or prophesying having his head covered dishonors his head. But every woman praying or prophesying with her head unveiled dishonoreth her head. For it is one and the same thing as if she were shaven. For if a woman is not veiled, let her also be shorn. But if it is a shame to a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be veiled. For a man indeed ought not to have his head veiled, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. For neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man." Verse 10, "For this cause ought the woman to have a sign of authority on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the woman without the man, nor the man without the woman. For as the woman is of the man, so is the man also by the woman. But all things are of God." Now we'll stop there. This reading has been read many times, and there is a little bit of a controversy in this particular passage. I'm not interested in that tonight. All I'm interested in essentially is the divine headship that is brought forward at the beginning of the reading, and also something that Paul brings about or mentions beginning at verse 11. Notice again, he says, "Nevertheless, neither is the woman without the man, nor the man without the woman in the Lord." Referring, of course, to not only marriage and the creation, but the fact that it is by a man and woman together, ideally in marriage, that God allows us to procreate, or as we said the other night, bring children, more specifically, souls into the world. God allows us to cooperate with Him, to bring souls into the world that ideally will be able to spend eternity with God in heaven. And so the home is so very important. And there is to be a union there. Yes, there is a headship. Nevertheless, there is the man cannot survive without the woman. And the woman, of course, without the man. It takes both, of course, as we know, to sustain the race. Now, this is no more evident than in the home or in marriage. What I want to do tonight is spend just a little while using this verse and the principles that are set forth. By the way, I don't know if you've thought about it, but the responsibilities in the home, they are essentially the same responsibilities that we have anywhere. Now, they are a little bit more directed and fine-tuned in that there is a relationship there between a man and a woman, but the responsibilities and the things that are to be taught children and the responsibilities that they are to be led in to assume essentially are the responsibilities and the priorities that would serve us in good stead all of our lives and would pretty much affect every situation that we might encounter. These things are learned in the home. Now let's begin by looking at the responsibilities of the husband. In Ephesians 5 and verse 23, we learn there, as Paul suggests here, that the man, or the husband, is the head of the wife. The Bible affirms that in the home, the husband, the father, the man of the house, is to assume the leadership role. Now, this is not a grant of power so much as it is rather an assignment of a duty or a responsibility. Few thoughts are more sobering to me than the realization that I'm going to have to stand before God one day and give an account as to how I raised my children and how I led my wife, especially as it relates to serving God, serving Christ, and being a faithful member of the Lord's church. This role, if you will, this responsibility was thrust upon me by God, and I may, as many men do, choose to reject it, not take it, perhaps run away and fear or cowardice, but God will hold me accountable to that as well. I have a role. All husbands have that role. It is a very responsible position, certainly. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, regarding some of these responsibilities and the leadership role that we are to have, and in providing for our own, Paul says that if a man will not provide for his own household, remember he says he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel or non-believer. Sounds like some serious charges there leveled against one who will not assume the role of being a provider for the family. It is necessary and it's right and good, and that role primarily falls upon the husband, the father. Not only in bringing home the bacon, as they say, but in providing all things necessary for the proper functioning and for the safety of that household. That used to be a commonly acknowledged aspect of marriage, even for folks who were non-religious, irreligious, it didn't matter. Men understood that they had a role that they had to play in the home. Now, I don't know about you, but I remember as a young boy, when I would get into trouble in the afternoons after school, or however it was I did it, I remember Mom always saying, as the old saying goes, wait until your father gets home. I'm going to tell your father, and he is going to deal with it. I remember that being said to me. I remember that being said to my older brothers. I remember that being said to my sister at times. And I remember many times Dad would come home from work about 5:30. He'd pull the car up into the driveway, and when he put that Dodge Dart into park, you could hear the U-joints click, so you always knew Dad was home. And then you'd hear him walk in his little wingtip shoes he had that would make that clicking sound. The door would get in, and then before he could even take his coat off, there's Mama telling him all about what one of us had done. And, of course, he would come into the bedroom, and he would take care of it. You know, I bet he hated that. I bet he hated and sometimes probably wondered, on his way home after a hard day at work, I wonder if someone's going to meet me at the door and tell me about something that was done that I'm going to have to take care of before I can even sit down and eat. He, as well as others, wouldn't even think of shirking that responsibility. But nowadays, it seems in many cases that the mother doesn't even know where the father is. And if does know where the father is, has no idea when the father will ever be back by the house, and doesn't know when or if she will ever be able to talk to the father again to tell them what the child has done. There is a responsibility that the husband has to provide for his own, not just physical thing, money, but also the leadership and the comfort and everything else, the guidance that is needed in the home. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, touching upon another responsibility there, Peter reminds husbands that we are to love our wives. We are to honor them as the weaker vessel. And we are to remember that we are joint heirs together of the grace of life. The primary role or function that the husband is to have, as far as God is concerned, is to accept the responsibility of being a joint heir of the grace of Christ, the grace of God, and to provide the spiritual leadership necessary for not only the wife, but for all the children. And to remember that we're not to lord it over our wives, but rather we are to remember that they are the weaker vessel, and that we are joint heirs together. And that the things that we do should be done with a view toward not ever upsetting that fact. Do you really think, as a husband, that if you were responsible for the loss of your soul, of your wife's soul, that you would get out of that unscathed, that the Lord would not hold you responsible for that as well? The husband is to remember that he is a joint heir with his wife. Now, the husband should shield and protect not only the wife, but the children in the home. The husband should guard the family against the wickedness that is in the world. The world is a very dangerous and it is a very scary place. I remember growing up as a child, hearing my mother and father saying things about going out and getting into trouble and being in certain places and watch out and don't be there and don't be here and paying attention to this, that, and avoid this. And I remember thinking that they just had no idea what they're talking about and why were they so worried. And now my kids are at an age where I'm saying the same thing and I'm worried about where they'll be and who they're going to be associating with and what they're doing and why and why are they doing this and why don't they do that. And those of you who have children and have gone this way before, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You wouldn't feel that way if you had not assumed a certain degree of responsibility for those children. We need to guard against the wickedness that is in the world. Now let me add something else here. And I dare you to talk to my wife afterwards and ask about this. But I think a husband should try, and I wrote it down to get it right. Now, she didn't tell me to write this, but try to satisfy her, that is your wife's, emotional needs and bring the joy and appreciation that she needs. Women like, they need to be told that they are appreciated. Women like to be held. Women like to be listened to. Women like to know that the things that they have to say are of concern and are important. Men, on the other hand, we're just on a different wavelength. We want to know if something's broke, do we need to fix it? If not, don't bother us with it. We don't need constantly someone going around and patting us on the back and telling us how great we are. It's good to know we are appreciated, but we're not concerned about those things like the woman is. You don't hear men getting together and complaining about how when they get home, their wife just won't sit down and hold them and comfort them while they sit there and shudder in tears about how bad the day was. Men and women are different. But I say that to say that we need to remind ourselves that we need to give a little bit more special attention to our wives, and I know all of us can improve in that. I know I can. But one of the things we need to do in this role, and I think that might be what Peter is talking about, as looking at them as the weaker vessel. Provide for the emotional needs that the woman has. And I think one of the problems that we have in the world today is many husbands are not doing that. And so the wives end up going somewhere else and finding it. And they don't have to go very far. So we have all these things as men, as husbands, as fathers that we got to work at and be mindful of. Again, as Peter says, recognition of the fact that we are joint heirs of the grace of Christ. That means then we need to say and do those things that would encourage our spouses as well as our children to keep on pressing toward that goal. Keep on pressing toward the heavenly home. And never allow ourselves to become a stumbling block that would interfere with that. Fathers need to spend time with their kids. I read a story, I found it in a book somewhere, but it's from the Saturday Evening Post. But the story is this, there's a cartoon, and it's the man and the wife, they're sitting at the dining room table eating dinner on a Saturday evening, and the little boy is there on the table and a little girl on the other side. And the wife says to the father, "Junior says he caddied for you today." And then you see this look of exclamation on the father's face. And he says, "I knew it. I knew I had seen that kid before." Demonstrating the fact that that father was so out of touch with his children that he didn't even recognize them. He looked vaguely familiar on the golf course, but just couldn't place him. Now that is a sad commentary on how many people are today. We need as fathers to spend more time with our children. Playing with them. Sitting down with them, teaching with them. Sitting down with them and guiding them in the directions that they need to go. Not just spending quantity time, but quality time as well. Fathers need to do that. Let's move on to the responsibilities of the wife and the mother. That reminds me, the father, make sure you pay the PG&E bill. We got PG&E here? It has been said that the mother is the heart of the home. As the old saying goes, if mama's not happy, no one's happy. It is true that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Remember back here in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul says, "Nevertheless, the man is not without the woman." It has to do directly with that, I believe. The fact that the woman has a responsibility, even over the man, when the man is a young child, a baby, to direct and provide for and guide that man off correctly so that when he comes of age, he will be able to do and take and assume the roles that he has. It takes courage and it takes will to raise children correctly. And due to the nature of the case, especially when the children are very young, the mother is probably more responsible for that than the father at times. And the father needs to be there to back up the mother. And needs to understand that it takes willpower and strength for the mom to do what she has to do sometimes. Because mamas don't always feel good. And us husbands sometimes we're oblivious to the fact and we have no idea what's going on and how much the mother does and all the things that she's got to take care of. It's a weighty responsibility to be a mother. You can substitute teachers. Teacher gets sick, you call in, you get a substitute teacher. You can substitute firemen. You can substitute ball players. You can substitute coaches. You can substitute presidents. You can substitute just about every position available. But it's hard to substitute a mom. There is no substitute when a mother is missing. And it's sad when that happens. But that just goes to show the value of being a mother. It's a great privilege to be a mother. In 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5, Paul reminds Timothy about his grandmother Lois and his mother Eunice and the faith that was in them and the faith then that because of their efforts was transferred to young Timothy. They did not shirk their responsibility as a mother or as a grandmother. But there's a sad case in the Bible. You turn back to 2 Chronicles chapter 22, down about verses 2 and 3. We read of a king, Ahaziah. Now, he only reigned about 1 year, and he was a wicked king. But as you read those two verses, you learn that his mother's name was Athaliah. But not only was her name mentioned, but it was specifically said not only was she his mother, but she was his counselor. His counselor to do wickedly. How about that? To be written on your tombstone as a mother. Now that not much is said of her, but that is said. Oh yeah, his mother was this, and she was his counselor to do wickedness. You see, the mother has a great influence in her children's life. And it's an influence that lasts not only while the early years of childhood, but throughout the life of the individual. Our mothers are long gone, many of us. But we still can remember some of the things they taught us and some of the things that they said. And we at times want to make sure we do not do anything that would cause them to be ashamed of us, even though they're no longer around. Mothers hold a great place in the lives of people, especially those who have done their role and assumed their responsibilities as well. In Titus 2, beginning at verse 3 and following, women are told to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded. What does it mean to be sober-minded? You want to know how to be sober-minded? You sit down about 10 o'clock, start watching soap operas, watch Judge Judy, watch the Oprah show, watch all these other shows that are on all day long, and then watch Entertainment Tonight and all this other stuff, and you'll be on the road to sober-minded, won't you? Is it any wonder that we see the family going the direction it is today when that's what people are spending their time watching? If you want to be sober-minded, you need to get away from that kind of stuff. You need to spend time reading and reading good books. Learn how to read a book. Learn how to have pencil in hand when you're reading and make little marks in the columns there. Underline things. Put little question marks, explanation marks. Read the introduction to these books. Learn from these books. Read and read carefully. Not be so in tune to who the latest person is and what they're doing and how they're in trouble. Stay away from that and read good books. Read the Bible. Study about things that you can learn and put into practice in your life. That's how you'll be sober-minded. But continuing on here in Titus 2 and 3, not only are they to be sober-minded, but they are to be in subjection to their husbands. They are to be workers at home. They are to be kind. And as you continue reading in that passage, you find out that the thrust of it all, Paul says, is that they would be a good example in all things. Essentially toward them that are without, those outside the church, so that they will not provide an opportunity or an occasion for folks to blaspheme God because of their behavior. We have here so far now the responsibilities of fathers and the responsibilities of mothers. And I hope you know these. And there's more. And you can read them in the scriptures. But time will not allow us to go into more depth tonight. Mothers, fathers, and children. Children have responsibility as well. Now, I was talking with someone about this a while back, and we were discussing some of the things that I believe the Bible affirms that children must learn that they are responsible for, their behavior and the things that they are to do. And the person made the suggestion that that's impossible because a kid doesn't know these things. In fact, they said, how on earth is a kid supposed to know all of that? And how can they be accountable? What would be the good reply to that? Well, it's the parent's job to teach them at a very early age what their responsibilities are as children and what their responsibilities are as they get a little bit older and what they have to do to plan for the future and how they are to conduct themselves, how they are to behave, the traits that they are to develop, those things that would make them a better catch, if you will, for the opposite sex. A thing, as we talked about the other night, children should be trained to learn that one of their responsibilities is to grow up and be able to assume responsibilities, to be able to live on their own. Remember, as it was said back in Genesis 2, for this cause shall a man leave and cleave. Too many folks are no longer leaving today. One of the brothers over there in Hayward, he's about 60 years old now, but he and his family, they owned a farm up in Petaluma. And his grandparents came over here from Sweden. And he remembered working on the farm, even as a little boy, getting up early in the morning, going out and taking care of the chores, then going to school, then coming home and doing the other chores. But I'll never forget this. He said that when he turned 18, his father came into the room and told him, son, you're 18 now. It's time for you to move out and get out on your own and take responsibility for your life. And he, in essence, kicked him out of the home. Did the same for all of the children. But it was, as he says, probably one of the best things that ever happened to him. Because he learned how important it was to get an education. He learned how important it was to work. And he's been doing that all ever since. And he holds his mother and father in high regard. Can you imagine someone coming up to their child today and telling them, rise and shine, you're 18 today. We bought a new suitcase for you. Mom is packing it right now. We've called a cab. Be here in 20 minutes. You're on your own. People don't leave anymore. You got grown children staying at home longer and longer. As Dr. Laura says, when the birds don't leave the nest, you end up with a dirty nest. Children need to be taught, though, beginning at a very early age, to develop the character and to develop the ability, with the parents' help, to be able to survive on their own. Children need to learn these things. And so, how does a child learn their responsibilities? They're taught. Now, here is a principle I want you to remember. In Hebrews 12 and verse 9. Hebrews 12 and 9. The writer says, we had fathers of the flesh who chastened us, and we gave them reverence. Now the context there is he is taking that then and adapting that to the fact that we should reverence God because of the chastening that he gives to us as his children. But in that particular passage, the verse that we just looked at, we find in here the proper action of fathers as well as the proper response of their children. We had fathers who chastened us, and we gave them respect. That's how it should be. Children need to learn to give their parents respect. In Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 3, children are admonished by Paul to be obedient to their parents, to honor their father and mother. And he reminds us that that is the first commandment with promise. But notice, if you will, there are three reasons given by Paul as to why children should obey their parents. First of all, because it is right. Secondly, because he says that it may be well with the child. And then thirdly, he says that they might live long or have long lives on the earth. Now certainly he is not guaranteeing here that if you honor your mother and father that you're going to have a ticket to live to your 80, 85. But notice here, the principle is that if children obey and honor their parents, listen to the instruction that they're given, act upon the wisdom that is handed down to them by mother and father, then it's going to be well with the child in the long run. You will avoid a lot of the things that cause trouble. You will avoid a lot of the people that will get you in trouble. And certainly you will, if you heed them and respect them and honor them and do what they've told you, you will avoid many of the things that tend to shorten one's life. Children have the responsibility to honor their parents. Even at an older age. I'm 50 years old and I still honor my father and will do what he suggests. And I will listen to his wisdom and guidance when he offers it. And I call and talk to him about once or twice a week, and I always let him know where we are and where we're going and where we'll be and how to get a hold of us, etc. Reminds me of an incident about 2 years ago. Bill had just gotten out of high school. He was my youngest. He was back in, we call it the office now. It was Mark's bedroom, but that's where the computer and stuff is. And he was sitting there and he was doing some kind of schoolwork or something. And I came in and I told him about how he ought to do something because he was having some problems. And he looked up at me and he made one of those faces and rolled his eyes and did like that. And it made me so angry. I don't know why, what, but I just lost it. And without even thinking, I said to him, I said, look, I said, you get together and you raise a family of four for 22 years and keep food on their table and make sure they have a place to sleep every night, provide for them and all their insurance and everything they need so they don't have a worry. And then after you've done that, then you can come and tell me how it's done. And I looked at it and I thought, you know what, that's what it's all about. And I stopped for a moment and I thought about my dad and how he had provided for me. Growing up, I never had to worry about where I was going to sleep. I never had to worry about going hungry. I never had to worry about any of that kind of stuff. The only thing I had to worry about was keeping one step ahead of him so I wouldn't be in trouble. It is no small thing for a man and a woman to provide for their family and to do it adequately for a period of 20, 25 years. It's not easy, but it's a labor of love. And you do anything to bring it about. The children have no idea until they get married and do the same. I think one of the things children have to remember, even at an older age, is that if they have a mother and father that have done that, they need to always honor that and pay them respect and try to emulate that in their lives. But unfortunately, we see more and more men and women both who are refusing to take on that responsibility. Children have responsibility in the home. We were talking about that tonight at the house. Chores. And how when we were growing up, we had chores. And you didn't get paid an allowance for doing them. You just did them. I remember twice a week we had to haul those big old metal garbage cans out to the street. I hated that. Mowing the lawn with an old push mower. We had to do that. All of these things, and we were expected to do them, and we were expected not to be have to be told, how come that garbage can ain't out on the street? How come that lawn isn't mowed? How come it's Saturday morning and you're not out with us pulling weeds? That was how we spent Saturday morning. Before we could go play, pull weeds. Children have responsibilities. But they need to be taught. And that's one of the reasons why we have lessons just as this. Now, here's something to consider. Remember, children did not ask to be born. They did not choose to be born. They weren't asked. They weren't even given an opportunity to pick or choose which parents they would get. It is our decision to bring them into the world. Children are here by our choice. If that alone isn't a sobering thought to you, then I don't know what else I could say. It behooves us then, as mothers, as fathers, as husbands and wives, to assume our responsibilities and also instill in the children the fact that they have responsibilities as well. Because if we do not, we are doing them a disservice. As we close tonight, and as we're talking about these things, I want to remind you that love, respect, honor, you can't buy these things with money. And they're not bought or earned by things that money can buy. But rather they will happen if you assume those roles and if at every opportunity you teach, not only in word, but by example as well. Doing that then, you will, as the writer said in the book of Proverbs, find that the mother and the father, their children, rise up and call them blessed. It's so sad today that many folks in many quarters are not doing this. The family is disintegrating before our very eyes. And as I said on Thursday night, I purposely have left for tomorrow morning at Bible class time the opportunity for us to discuss rather bluntly the condition of the family today. Like I said, many times you'll sit down and go over stuff like this and tell people how the family's supposed to be, and they'll look at you and they'll say, "Man, I don't know what world you're in, but in the real world, it's not like this. Give me something I can use." Well, this is something you can use if you will just do it. Now, as we close, I want to suggest this for you, a little homework assignment. You have to bring it back to me, but something for you to think on. List some things that you can do to promote the trust and confidence of your spouse. And if you still have young children, you can include that in there as well. But sit down. That's a good exercise. Sit down and make a list. List things that you can do that will promote the trust and confidence of your companion. Husbands, does your wife trust you? I don't mean trust you when you're out of the home. But I mean in the fact that she has hitched her wagon to yours, and wherever you're going to go in life, she's going to go. And whatever you bring upon yourself, she's going to suffer it as well. Does she have confidence in you and trust that you will take her in the right direction? And wives, does your husband have trust and confidence in you that you'll be there and that you'll be the support that he needs from time to time and that you'll be able to raise the family and that you will act with wisdom? Someone that he can be proud of? We need to work on these things. If we do that, I think we will go a long way toward fulfilling these responsibilities. As is our custom, in just a moment, we're going to be standing to sing an invitation song. We do that to provide an opportunity for any who may be here tonight and is not yet a Christian and knows what must be done to obey the gospel. If you're here tonight and ready to do that, I'm sure we can assist you. Perhaps you're here tonight as a child of God and you have so sinned that you need to address it in a public manner. and are desirous of our prayers on your behalf. If that is you, then this invitation is certainly for you as well. As we say, there's no reason why any of us has to leave here tonight not knowing that we are right with God. If you need to respond, why not do so while we stand and while we sing?